Where's the little pond at?
That's actually a huge asteroid crater in Russia called the Kali Crater. It just looks, it looks small. So you're in DC now at a conference, eh?
Yes.
How's it going?
It's very long. Dr. Fauci just gave us about an hour and a half long talk. And this is like, they're doing all the COVID work. All right. TJ, why don't you introduce yourself?
Hi, everybody. I'm TJ Lee Miyake. This is my first time at this committee. I switched committees due to my school schedule.
Nice to see you here. Yeah. Ken.
Ken Pierce, member at large.
Matt.
Matt Geltmaker, council member.
Na Lee, council member with Marin County.
And Kevin.
Sorry, I was just eating Kevin Hutchcroft, HHS.
And Thomas. Yeah, you're. And we have Kieran Mark.
You're my co-chair.
Yeah.
Mark Mulgar, council staff.
Kira, council staff. There we go.
And myself, I'm one of the co-chairs. I guess the only co-chair right now, yeah. So the draft is the agenda. Anybody want to have any changes?
We see here we have a co-chair election. We have three discussions. If John joins us, I think John mentioned in an email to me that they probably wouldn't have the current presentation finished. So what we've done in the past, of course, is John has brought past presentations for us just to review as a template. I hope that Bill or Tracy comes. They didn't have a presentation ready as far as I know, because I haven't seen it. And so probably more discussion as far as like what they are thinking of presenting if they show. And Thomas, I haven't seen a presentation either. So I assume that Thomas will just be discussing what the presentation will look like.
So a quick question. Is TJ a co-chair? Is that why he's on?
TJ is not a co-chair, but TJ has just recently joined this committee. You're muted, Ken.
So I thought you had to either be elected or be a co-chair to get on this committee.
So this is a council affairs committee?
Oh, I'm sorry. My mistake. I've got the other one tomorrow. Thank you.
Day after tomorrow.
Yeah, definitely. All right. We'll accept that by consensus. The minutes for May 10th.
All right. So we see here our pro forma. Then we had a conversation about making this committee Zoomed. And then an ETE update, a presentation review, and an aging PLWH presentation review with Chip Sapanich.
Any changes necessary?
Looks not like TJ hand.
Except, oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I just noticed that I was listed as absent, but I actually wasn't. I was on leave of absence at that point, so in May.
Okay. I'll make some correction. Yeah, I got it.
Thank you.
Good catch. No other changes, and we'll accept that by consensus also. Let's see, announcements. Are there any announcements? Go ahead, Thomas.
Yeah, I just kind of want to acknowledge that the monkeypox thing is kind of starting to roll out. So I just wanted it all on your radars with regards to the city is currently putting together collateral for communications around what's going on and how to answer communities' questions and also what the prevention strategies will be moving forward. So more to come as that happens.
Thomas, can I ask you a question about that?
Sure.
I've noticed in the national press around monkeypox, there has been it seems like a decision to not portray the community that is most potentially impacted, which is gay men. I mean, I had to actually dig into European articles to realize that the majority of folks who were infected were gay men in what I'm saying, gay situations. Do you know if DPH will be hopefully making that clear as far as like who is most at risk?
How do I say this? So that is who is most at risk at the moment, Mark. So the fact that it's kind of a skin-to-skin contact, we don't want to, for lack of a better word, early on, kind of bake in the identity of gay men with monkeypox, just due to the fact that if you think of childcare settings and schools and things along those lines, we kind of learning from the HIV epidemic with regards to people who are truly at risk. So I'll just stop there. And so there is an energy at this point to make sure that it's just messaged out. But we are focusing on people who see those populations as our first wave of health education.
It's not going to be in the messaging, which is, in my opinion, unfortunate. But I guess I get where you're coming from as far as you want to maybe create stigma. But it does sound like then you're targeting as far as where the message will particularly be placed in those institutions and agencies and perhaps places that has that demographic. Because I also feel like a demographic should be, if a demographic is being, there's disparity there, they should be made aware. So, you know, it's kind of a delicate balance of like, you certainly don't want to do fear mongering that can lead to stigma, but you also have to prepare a community if a community is particularly impacted. I mean, we saw that with COVID when it came to a lot of people who were Black and brown or who were outside of normal weight patterns were the ones who were being hospitalized and dying. And so there was eventually messaging, but I think we saw that there are also lots of lives lost prior to that targeted messaging.
Yep. And that was a good summary of kind of the dance that we'll have to do of walking that line with regards to addressing the mechanics of who's at risk and at the same time the stigma that will come about. And if anything, if it does get associated with a certain community, like the larger prevention strategy of not having to undo that will serve us well kind of further down the road, if that makes sense.
That makes sense.
Good, Ken.
So I've been reading on this as well, and I think the issue is in other countries, it's not just gay men. And it seems to be, as I read it, it's more susceptible for HIV positive people. So there's all these things that they need to get all connected together because they don't want to label HIV people as, and the stigma that would throw that, or just gay men, bisexual men, men who have sex with men, and what that has, because we have, it passes skin to skin. And so, why it's come first to the gay community, it's not real clear, but it passes just as equally, just as easily skin to skin by anybody that has that connection. So I think it's in one of these developing stages where certainly I trust the HIV services to come up with a message that gets to the people it needs to without creating the stigma and the alarm that such that nobody wants to be around anybody who's gay or bisexual, and especially with the gay pride coming,
Thank you. That's very illuminating as for around HIV. I think that's actually where my concern comes from, though, around pride. Pride is often a skin to skin type of event. You know what I mean? Like, I just feel like there should be some messaging there, or we can see some problems nationally, because pride is often an event that's quite sexualized.
But we also have the FDA, and we have to assume that they will come out with that too, because we're not the only ones having pride.
Yeah, I guess I'm just thinking locally, though, because I wash my hands of what can be done nationally.
I also heard.
So I missed the first part of that. Are there Are there actually any cases in SF right now?
There are.
In Sacramento.
Four that I saw, and I think there's a few more, but the samples have to be sent to the CDC for confirmation, so it takes a little bit of time to get that back. And I also was talking to a clinician. She was kind of saying that it might just be the fact that gay men screen more frequently for stuff. So it actually could be present in other populations and it's just not being picked up. So yeah, so just to put that out there.
That's a really valid point. Thank you for Chuck allowing this conversation to happen during the announcer's agenda item. It just felt like
wanted and to there we go. It. It's just like, I don't mind it because it's always interesting. I'm at a conference right now and Dr. Fauci spoke and that was one of the things he talked about was how he doesn't want to have the stigma of the monkeypox hitting the same population as the HIV when it first came out. So he said they're trying to come up with language around it to put out a warning, but how to do it in the right way.
Yeah.
And I actually do feel like that's kind of where community comes in, right? So you all can... you all can say whatever you'd like to say. Those of us who represent government entities can't do that, don't have that privilege. So just a heads up.
Makes sense.
Did you have any other notes, Mark?
It's also been called the AIDS 2.0, like by some people. Oh, there's all these stigmatizing going on for it. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what Thomas and Ken were speaking to as far as like why there would be concern. I guess my concern is always more around like the like, well, can we stop? Can we have a prevention? But I get it for sure. I totally get it. I mean, I have worked. We've all worked in this industry for a little while. We know how horribly damaging stigma can be.
Oh, I did receive word from John and Bill. John is not finished with his presentation just yet. He's thinking that he can send it out probably Friday and can do a quick overview on Zoom after that at some point next week, if that's agreeable. And then I heard from Bill and he is requesting to push that back a month. He's had a lot of presentations recently. So if they could both be indulged those requests, it would be appreciated.
I think we can indulge one of those requests. The second request for sure. Like, so this was amounting to be a 2.5 hour full council meeting because there were three presentations. If we cut Megatrends with Bill and Tracy, that I think puts it down to two presentations, John and Thomas, which is 2 hours, and we certainly saw from the evaluations that people were not loving the 2.5 hours, although we used to have 3 hour
right
meeting anyway.
Program person, right?
Yeah. And so I'll put that in the work plan that we're just going to move the Megatrends to next month, no problem. As far as John goes, I don't think we can indulge that because that would mean we'd have to convene a meeting just for John. I think you could tell John that I mean, with this committee's permission, that just go ahead and send it out to the group or to me and we'll forward it. But this is a presentation we've seen year after year, like literally every single year right. that I've been on the council. So I'm not sure there's like this needs to be discussed or vetted prior to appearing at the meeting. So if you want to just let them know, send it to Mark or to Kira, we'll distribute. But there's no need for us to reschedule a whole new meeting to review.
Okay, I'll send that word along. I appreciate it.
I agree with that. Well, that was easy.
Actually, Chuck.
Oh, go ahead, Tom.
I'll let me confirm with Tracy because I don't think she can bump it. So just to add that,
If you can confirm, because you know, Megatrends is it's two people talking about two different things, so it could be split. If she can come and talk about Megatrends, which is of course like national trends and initiatives that are happening around prevention. I mean, we could just split that up. So if you want to have that conversation with Thomas and maybe include me as you see fit, so that by next week when I put together I mean, I'll have a draft agenda for the full council on Thursday and I'll keep it in there. But it could always be updated, of course, if she chooses to stay or to leave. Just loop me in.
That sounds good. Is there any other announcements? No, all right. So no public here. We're into a co-chair election. Do we have any volunteers?
How many of our members are not here?
You can tell the enthusiasm is just going.
How many of the members? How many members are not here that might be?
Let me check that out. I think Irma is one of them. I don't know if Irma.
In total, it's three. It's Bill, Irma, and Paul.
Yeah, that seems unlikely, I have to say, because Paul unfortunately does not regularly attend this meeting. I'm probably coming close to being out of compliance. And I kind of doubt that Irma or Bill would want to do that. I know that we've had co-chairs certainly step up, like David, to be committee co-chairs, but that's kind of like a last resort kind of thing. Yeah. So that would leave then.
I can handle it for next.
Yeah. But I don't think this is a solvable problem that can wait till next month. So it's almost like, we should determine here if we're going to have a solo co-chair or if TJ or Ken or Na or Matt would like to. I mean, let me just do a little hard sell, a soft sell of a hard sell. We can make this super easy for you. All you have to do is literally just approve the agenda. And facilitate and swap off facilitation with Chuck. Chuck already comes. I mean, I don't want to speak for Chuck, but Chuck already comes to every steering committee meeting. I think that's embedded in your schedule, Chuck. So this could be super easy. Whoever would like to review an agenda and every other meeting, like facilitate.
Unfortunately, I can't do it. I'm serving as interim president of student council at City College, and I just found out I'm running unopposed to be elected. So
that sounds like you have plenty of room if you're unopposed. That's like no stresses.
It doesn't mean I have the skills. It doesn't mean I have the time now.
I'm going to just go around and fresher folks. How about you, Ken? You're like a voice of experience and wisdom. And I know you can facilitate a meeting like just so wonderfully.
Okay. A balanced voice in Ken, yes.
Nah, I've seen you in a recording in Marin. I know you have the skills to pay the bills as far as being able to facilitate. I literally saw it in a recording. Any interest, Na?
I'm still trying to learn about, the Council Affairs Committee and the SF Council. So I feel like I'm not ready to step into that role as of now. Maybe in the
future. Matt, ever since you worked at the foundation, I've just seen you as a real leader. I mean, it's been 20 years together, and I've just really been like, oh boy, this.
Mark, I did several years as the co-chair for this committee when it was named GPA. And also membership. So I would not be able to, I'm maybe, like I've mentioned to you, I may have to take a leave of absence soon anyway.
That's true, okay.
So it would be a good idea.
So what I can offer is I will do, if you will, an interim. I have some health issues, as you may have noticed. Sometimes I'm not here, but you certainly, I can do an interim co-chair. And I go to steering anyway, so it's not like it wouldn't be when Chuck is not there, I certainly could represent it on steering too.
Okay. Would anyone like to move to put forward Ken as an interim co-chair of this committee?
I move to make Ken Pearson interim co-chair for this committee.
Thomas, was that a second? I saw your hand raised. All right. Any opposed? Congratulations, committee co-chair.
It's pretty easy. I don't miss any meetings. So, yeah. Okay. Well, with that, we'll, who is actually here?
So I think we only have Thomas. And Thomas is going to just his thoughts on their thoughts. My apologies. Their thoughts on what the presentation will be like.
Cool. Okay. So literally, I had taken an old presentation and updated it for this conversation, and then I'd lost it. I feel like it's like computers 2020. I cannot figure out where it's at. So I was just trying to redo that with this process. But I'll give you a little bit of overview, and then I'll show you some of the slides relevant to the conversation just to help frame it. And I think what would be helpful for me is just one is your all's input with regards to this is work that falls outside of HIV. So just kind of being clear with that, it impacts it and it kind of relate to it. But as you all know, Chep went through a significant identity shift 5 or 6 years ago where we took all of the preventable diseases that the DPH works on, and we just started to address those as a whole. So the roadmap process was a little bit of the beginning of that process with regards to sexual health and drug users' health. And we are now moving kind of beyond that based on our COVID experience. So your lens with regards to like, yeah, the council really is not gonna wanna know about this, or like the council would actually really like to weigh in more on this kind of, I'll say innovative or futuristic component with regards to where we are going as a unit and then as a public health entity. That being said, Mark, can you grant me sharing screen options? Show you a couple of these slides.
You should have that already. I don't think I've ever
received. Oh, there it is, sorry, see it. Great. So it's interesting, it's bringing it up in this presenter. So basically the idea is looking at what's happened over COVID, specifically with the case investigation and contact tracing efforts, like what we had kind of two significant kind of movements forward with regards to building out a training network and then a referral network. So I'll go into a little bit more detail about what both of those look like. A little bit of the background, basically, we had a surge for COVID in 2020. And what we did is we engaged the CBOs to kind of help us with the CICT lift that needed to happen at that particular time. So we had activated a number of what we call DSW staff, which are disease service workers. And a number of those folks were like librarians, taxpayers. And so a lot of them were outside of the traditional DPH realm. And in my activation is case investigation and contact tracing. We saw a large disparity of Latinos being impacted by COVID, and specifically monolingual Spanish-speaking individuals living in the city. And so knowing that the skills that were needed to do the work, which was health education, giving people results, providing people with resources, hotels, food, diapers, and things along those lines, and then basically kind of that counseling, that TLC that people needed in a moment of crisis. We pivoted about 120 CBO staff that were working on various contracts with CHEP to doing case investigation and contact tracing with us. And so that pivot was pretty aggressive, for lack of a better word, because they basically went from being autonomous to being on our team for the most part, like full time. So we were meeting multiple times a day. We were huddling with them. We were putting them into our systems with regards to how to access our databases with regards to documenting the calls that they were making to people who were positive for COVID or contacts. So And what the successes that kind of came of that is this, the staff were cultural fits. We had funding that was in place that kind of we were able to use to address COVID. We had people that were more likely to speak the language of the primary language of the person who was being impacted. It created a strong sense of community with partners that I had not worked with before, specifically a lot of partners in the mission, and the Bayview OMI Western Edition. So it was nice to kind of go outside the tradition.
Oh, Thomas, I'm sorry. Can I just ask a quick question? Can you, the prior slide had an acronym that I was holding until I realized I...
RFA?
No, PHI?
Personal health information?
Thank you.
Protected.
Is it protected?
I think it is, yeah.
Okay, thanks, Kevin. Yeah, so we were able to share that information just due to the fact that we had to tell the person that the person had COVID in order for them to call. So that was something that was a pretty significant change from public health. There's always been this energy with regards to, is a CBO part of the health department, or is it part of a, or is it not? And so we've always struggled with that kind of balance, and COVID kind of pushed that question into, we should accept them as part of our network, basically. Thanks, Mark. So the successes I just mentioned, what people, and let me go to this slide, I think is representational with regards to, there were about 50,000 people that we reached out to in 18 months time. So, and each of those people was like a good hour and a half on the phone. So it was not as if it was a brief intervention or just a quick call. And so if you think about it, those 50,000 people kind of came in with questions, confused, fear, and alone. They managed to talk to somebody on our team. They got emotional support, health education, and referrals to services that were relevant to them either getting tested, getting hotels, or getting access to vaccines. So any questions at this point? I'll stop there for a second. So kind of fast forward with regards to vaccines coming out in a significant way, and contact tracing and case investigation was no longer as effective as it was prior to vaccines. One is just the Delta variant was changing so quickly that by the time somebody was diagnosed, they got the information, they were for the most part out of their infectious period and could go back into the community. At the beginning of the epidemic, COVID, we had the opportunity to actually disrupt the chain of infection due to the fact that it was slower and there was no vaccine available for people to access. So it was pretty much one of our main intervention opportunities other than testing itself. So people kind of keep asking us, let's prepare for the next pandemic or whatever it might be. And I think monkeypox is timing. It seems a little bit interesting. But what we discovered, for lack of a better word, and discovered is the wrong word, so I'll definitely change that. But we kind of were able to acknowledge the unmet needs of so many San Franciscans. So when you talk to 50,000 people, but basically about 400 folks interacted with them, we really got a strong sense of who was needed services that the community-based organizations provide, and the clinical settings as well. And so all of these kind of issues are still predominant, and they actually lead to our HIV acquisition issues, our Hep C and our STI things. So what we decided was like, if we can do what we just did for COVID, why can we not do this for these particular issues? So why can't we proactively reach out to people who have these particular needs and provide them services versus waiting for them to kind of walk through our door? So we decided to take that on. The other piece that was a little bit, it was significantly unique about this is from a DPH perspective, we have the people who traditionally access DPH services. So that's a certain slice of San Franciscan. But during the COVID experience, we got exposed, no pun intended, to a large swath of people in the city and county of San Francisco who were in need of services. And so it wasn't the traditional DPH kind of people seeking services. And so that really kind of opened our eyes up to that large layer of individuals who are kind of living just on the poverty line, who don't necessarily qualify for services or see them needing services, but really could benefit from everything that is out there. So just to put that in mind with regards to kind of acknowledging that, that body of people is most at risk for kind of falling into worse health issues or disparities, and how do we address those needs? I'm gonna go into this first. So the process basically is, what we wanna do is put together a network that allows, so if somebody has a particular triggering issue, whether it's poverty, hunger, HIV, STI, hep C, cancer diagnosis, that person's will have access to that person's phone number. We can reach out to that person proactively saying, hey, I understand you're seeking our services. How can I help? And we figure out what they need, get that assessment done, and then help them find their way to the community-based organizations to provide those services, or basically the community-based organization actually calling them actively and saying, hey, I understand you need food. This is how it works. I understand that you need an HIV test. This is how, you know, come on in and let's say you open an appointment. So kind of lifting the burden of the referral process from the person who is at risk or sick, and putting that on this network structure to actually help people access services. There's a lot of moving parts in what I just said. And so we are currently in the process of building that out. So any questions at this point about that? So the other significant kind of win or thing that we kind of noticed with the COVID experience was the fact that we trained, oh, Ken, go for it. You're on mute, Ken, if you're, there you go.
Yeah, I got it. So one of the points that you made along with everything else was recovery access. Is that recovery to COVID or recovery access, meaning recovery to drug issues? What was that referring to?
I actually don't think I said the word recovery access.
No, it if you read back on your list, access to recovery.
Oh, so that would be in regards to substances. Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
I think what we have been learning with regards to, I'm assuming it's okay to say, but it's really hard to access services, specifically trying to find a bed or for somebody who's looking for certain things. In the current linkage center that is happening in Civic Center, we have had a little bit of a journey with regards to what that is like, and it should be streamlined immensely so people can actually access services better. So.
Thank you.
But Ken, I think what I really want to kind of impress upon this is basically that this network structure really should be about, it's not necessarily a issue that triggers it, but it's just a need. And if we put people into the system, for lack of a better word, that whatever the need is, we can address it. So we're currently doing a small pilot with some staff around diabetes in the Mission. And I keep kind of impressing upon them, it's like, okay, don't kind of wed yourselves to the concept of being a diabetic expert, but just be an expert in helping people access services. That's really, and whatever the service is, I mean, it's so much easier to actually help somebody get linkage to care if they have HIV than it is diabetes. Like the difference between those two experiences is huge. And we wanna help build on our linkage to care model for HIV for all the other diseases that are relevant. So it's a heavy lift. It's ambitious, but at the same time, the disparity that continues to exist around people with diabetes will persist if we don't put that energy into it. So the other significant kind of project that kind of came about was just the fact that we were able to train up so many people in COVID processes that we some of the folks that actually interacted with us, the CBOs, were day laborers kind of prior to becoming contact tracer and case investigations. So they went from a day laborer position to a relatively complex public health intervention specialist. It took about 6 weeks for us to onboard people during that process, and they had to use a very complex computer-based system called CalConnect for COVID. They had to use a soft phone within that system. They had to attend our daily meetings. It was tough. I would actually say that it was easier to become a phlebotomist than it was to become a contact tracer. But what we learned is that we could train up folks who were from the community in a relatively short period of time to do very complex public health needs. And as the economics of the Bay Area continue to shift, we continue to struggle to find a workforce that we can, looks like the communities that are impacted to actually make services happen. So knowing all of that, we've created this academy, Community Health Worker Academy, I'm just calling it the Academy, which is basically it is a free training service for people who are looking for public health background, introduction, and understanding of the work that we do. And much of the core curriculum is stuff that we know from HIV, motivational interviewing, harm reduction, all of the other kind of nuts and bolts with regards to what it takes to actually provide services to those at risk for various diseases in the city and county of San Francisco. So the network is its own thing with regards to facilitating a communication across community-based organizations and DPH clinics, so people can actually access services both in clinical settings and in CBO settings by reducing the burden to the client. And then the other piece is actually training up a workforce to engage in that particular work. So I will stop there and stop sharing and then get some feedback from you all.
Thank you, TJ. That was a very important question.
Hogwarts? It is Hogwarts.
Didn't recognize it.
The bigger question is how its relevance to the slides.
It's the Academy that created it.
Or I guess the Chili and the Academy are different things, but they're connected, right? Yeah.
They are different things, but they both, I don't want to say report to me, but they're both projects that they're both contracts that I oversee. And so I'm actually actively going to work to pull their energies together, much like with regards to the mentorship program that Shanti's doing as part of that as well. All folds in very nicely to kind of building up a workforce entry point for people. So
for sure, along with FOG as well. I think I have a question. First of all, this was a great presentation. It was very interesting. What would you say that your overall point of this presentation as far as like the new norms that have been established?
I would say that the new norms is just the fact that there's proof of concept that we can take on issues that are usually seen as not being able to be addressed. So really complex social issues.
By having like a holistic de-siloed model?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
I would just try to hit that repeatedly so that, because I think people can get lost in the interesting details. There's just a lot of interesting things in there. And I think it just, maybe my advice would just be like, just repeatedly hit that so that people know why they're seeing it.
Okay, I appreciate that.
What we should be doing anyway, right, is de-siloing.
Well, and the DPH really, I see your hand there, Ken. The DPH is the only one that could kind of pull this off. So I think in the past, prior to COVID, I didn't see the vision of being able to go there. Now that we've done it once, it won't be the same structure as COVID, right? We're not going to have an extra $20 billion to do this, but all the parts are there. So we just need to coordinate them. And CHEP alone, we have so many different contracts. I think even if we just did it with CHEP contracts, we would actually be pretty impressive. So, and there's stuff within CHEP I didn't even know about. I'm like, oh, we have food access programs and we have, you know, all of this fascinating stuff. So, yeah. Ken?
So is this to suggest that maybe in the future, HIV services will be consolidated along with all these other programs, needs, health issues, whatever, into a single approach?
I think what I would say is that I would love to see that everything else rise up to the level of HIV services. So, I mean, in reality, it's like, why does somebody with diabetes have a different path than somebody living with HIV? So what is that about? And there's a disparity there. So somebody living with HIV gets a lot more resource than somebody, and it's not to lower the HIV resource. It's just more to the fact that, I mean, I really, truly from my pain in my heart kind of thing, like I did not realize how badly people were suffering.
I just think that maybe some comment assuring folks that it isn't to bring the level of service for HIV positive people down in order to reach all these others. It's to reach all these others by bringing them up to the level of HIV services.
Yeah, I can confirm. I'm sorry, Mark. I can confirm that what Thomas is saying as a type 1 diabetic for 30 years and HIV, type 1 diabetes has been much more of a hardship for me. Just thought I'd offer that.
Thank you,
Thomas. Can you think of another disease to put up with diabetes? Because I think that's almost the easy one to go for. And it has so many cultural points in it that make it slightly different than HIV, I think.
Sorry, I want to make sure that I nail Ken's point down. So Ken, I appreciate what you said, and I'll make a slide to reflect that is our goal, to raise up the quality of services for everybody. Kevin, I appreciate you, testimonial. And then TJ, I kind of missed your, so a different disease, what are you thinking?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm just trying to think, is there another disease that DPH is trying to work with, like HIV or diabetes, and it's not getting any attention? I think that's
You mentioned cancers.
That's a too easy one to go for. And then also, I mean, like, there's a lot of cultural aspects with food and, you know, ethnic culture that feed into that that don't have any connection with HIV. So if we could have another example, that's all.
Sure. So what we're looking at pivoting to next is actually overdose and alcohol use. So alcohol use is prevalent. It's not quite as sexy. But it's actually doing a lot of damage. Like we're seeing people showing up in the ERs with alcohol poisoning a relatively regular basis. And so that's the other kind of, would that help as an example?
Sure, I think that would be great.
In a way though, like when I hear alcohol, when I hear drug addiction, I hear of a lot of services out there, right? When I think of something like diabetes, I think, not as much services by any means. Like I don't hear of like a range of like health workers or support groups or, you know, those kinds of things. So I just want to throw it in there. The diabetes seems to me like everyone's heard of it, but also has everyone heard of like a system of care that's as deeply and as richly funded as the HIV care? No, we don't. Even though, you know, there are funding streams out there, of course, right? And we see certainly we have like there's a huge media campaign around diabetes, but our services there, I don't know. I love that perspective, Thomas, because you know this is a national thing as well. It's always been very objectionable to a lot of people, including myself, the idea that like, well, San Francisco and New York, Boston, LA should get less funding so that we can give more funding to other areas. It's that kind of like instead of getting a bigger pie, we need to slice it smaller because it's not fair. which is to me like, well, you're not doing any lessons learned then. The reason why we're doing so well is because we're able to do all these things. What you should be doing is actually applying this model to your own populations. And the same goes for other disease stages. I remember when I was a peer advocate at St. Mary's and doing a lot of like stuff for Shanti for people with HIV, it eventually all got dismantled because the head nurse was like, but we don't have this stuff for people with cancer, so I don't know why you should. It's just like, well, then why don't you? Kind of logic, you know? Like, why? So you're gonna take my shit away? I mean, you're gonna take my interventions away? So like as some kind of weird reverse version of equity? Okay.
I think that's what I was speaking to earlier when I said, yeah, which Thomas is gonna put an entry in, yeah.
I mean, yeah, it frustrates me, to say the least. But yeah, that's usually the solution, right, Mark? It's like, okay, let's lower everything else. And I mean, one, this is more of a prevention strategy. So this is not specific to HIV care, but it's people accessing all the services that are out there. But I get the energy. If I were to ask you all, so just with regards to people's healthcare information being shared within a network process, what concerns or what thoughts do you all have around that? Because I think in HIV, we have a lot of visibility, and that's very prevalent for us. And at the same time, that energy prohibits us from sharing people's information so that providers can actually actively reach out and call them to provide them services. So we've got some work to do on our end to making sure that things are legal, but we're in a really good spot with regards to that process and we're going through it. But I just wanted to hear like community's perspective on like there's risk there, right? But then there's value, and what's the right balance?
Well, I think your issue about alcohol, that might be an area that clients might object to everybody being able to access information about.
Yeah. I mean, I don't see this necessarily as an EMR system that would be out there in some ways, but it might be like it'll have to have minimal information in it, but just enough information so the person who's providing the service can call the person and say, hey, I understand you need something. What would that look like? So we have to figure out what would go in that system. But it worries me a little bit just personally, like what's the right balance? But I don't want it to be a poison pill that actually stops this from happening.
You can imagine if you had monkeypox and you got a call from your folks and you didn't know that it was your records were accessible to a number of different agencies and groups like the CBO approach.
Well, I mean, we just did that with COVID for 50,000 people. And it was rare that people were upset. But COVID didn't have the stigma that monkeypox might have, for example.
Exactly.
Initially it did. Like, you know, I think as it became more and more routinized, people's energy shifted. And to tell you the truth, I mean, part of why we want to move forward with this is people now know what the DPH does. Like, people have heard the word contact tracing and case investigation and that the health department reaches out and provides services much more than they ever did 3 years ago. Like, we were invisible. I think if you'd asked anybody what a contact tracer was or a case investigator or the health department does this, they would have been, you'd be hard pressed to find somebody who understood it. And we've also developed a lot of trust with those 50,000 people. Like, a lot of people were really grateful for those phone calls. Okay, so I'll continue to work on the slide deck. And if folks have other thoughts, I would love any additional feedback. I'm always open to it. I'm excited about this possibility. I really do feel like this could be a game changer. We had an Ending the Epidemics meeting with Philip, I can't remember his last, Harold Philip, who is the current AIDS czar, on Friday. And I quickly just kind of did a 5-minute presentation off the cuff. And he literally said, what federal support would you need to get this off the ground? So he was really like, he's like, this could be a game changer. And everyone keeps talking about addressing equity and disparities, but it sounds like you all have a plan to actually do something. So it was very inspiring to kind of hear those words from a national leader on the possibility of this. And it's also just to be transparent. That's why I have not showed up in these spaces the way that I showed up in these spaces prior to COVID. So I'm trying to get this off the ground at the same time doing my regular gig. And I'm currently now getting pulled into monkeypox as well, just due to the fact that the conversation at the beginning of this was the fact that we want to make sure that people who are representative of the communities that are at highest risk at the moment are those interacting with the communities that need messaging and pulling on the networks that I have and things along those lines. So just a heads up. Cool. Thank you all. What was that, Mark?
Well done.
Thank you.
And exciting.
Chuck, are you running this meeting?
Yes. I'm just trying to, I thought Mark was saying something and I couldn't tell if he was or wasn't.
Yes.
He is, but I'm not hearing him. Oh, there we go. Okay. All right. So any other questions or anything else? Well, if not, then I guess I'll see most of you on Thursday then, right?
So I texted Tracy and she said, I think she'd prefer to stay on the agenda. But I'm gonna send an email right now, Mark, to confirm that. Just because
can you see Bill Bloom so that he knows as well, because then he might shift his timeline back as well. I mean, we could do it separate, but I know that I know that it's usually a unified presentation since the merge.
Sorry, Mark.
Not unified. It's usually presented together in like two separate parts. So it's easily parsed out, but Bill just might want to like still do it with Tracy. And so if you could CC Bill or let Bill know that actually Tracy can't, like that you heard that he'd like to move a month, which is okay, but Tracy can't. Yeah.
Great.
Cool.
Oh, can I ask a quick question? Can you remind me when the Marin County allocations presentation is? Is that in October?
It's in October.
Okay, great. Because we're behind on our allocations presentation schedule. So we'll be done in September. So it'll be done right in time. Okay.
Okay, perfect. Thanks. Looks like TJ has a hand up.
Yep. Mark, I'm just curious. Are we thinking about having a second meeting or something, a full council meeting in July and August like we have in the past?
Yes.
Okay. Do we know the dates?
Same dates as always, fourth Monday of the week. I mean, fourth Monday of the month.
It's an extra.
Oh, extra? Oh, yeah. No, we haven't done that for a while.
Okay.
Yeah, we haven't done that for a long while. Not since, I think, look at your memory going back in time that far. We haven't done that since the merge because we have our resource allocation and prioritization thing kind of like down. And so we haven't had to do that for a while. So even when we merged, because of the different timeline, annual for care, and I don't know, every 5 years, every lifetime for CHEP, as far as when CDC needs our thoughts, that the merge didn't even challenge the strides we've made in making it a really efficient, tight ship. Oh, sorry. Didn't mean to wave back.
No, that's okay.
Ken?
So is there anything else?
Yeah, I just feel like we should keep on back burner this whole monkeypox stuff because I can't help but think that the council as a whole would like a presentation of some sort down the road about, I don't know, medications related to it, especially if we're seeing it's more susceptible for people with HIV. I just want us to keep it on the radar. Because I think it could also challenge us up in for future allocations of funds if we have to draw from one for the other.
I'll point out, though, that we would not be able to do that with CARE because the CARE is specific around HIV. But I think I agree that this should be on our radar, much as COVID was, right? And so there should be, as more information comes, we should be hopefully hearing
that. But as we've just said, if it is more susceptible for people with HIV, then it is relevant to us to looking at, you know, if there are medications available, are we making sure those medications get on ADAP or, you know, those kinds of things. So
I don't think there is treatment available right now. There is a vaccine. But I agree, Ken, information would be helpful. It's in our world for sure. But Mark is quite right. You cannot spend monies on any other disease.
Well, then vaccine is a good issue then, mm-hmm. right there. I mean, if we know this population is more susceptible and we know we have a vaccine, then shouldn't we be pushing for that vaccine to go to those at most at risk?
At this point, it's mostly used for outbreaks, containment, but yeah, you're right. This is useful information probably for the council.
Yeah, useful information. And also, it doesn't take away from the fact that we could always advocate for de-siloing, you know, much as like we don't necessarily do things specifically to fund standalone Hep C, like a non-co-infected. We definitely see the correlation between the communities, right? And so some contracts are packaged with different kinds of different funding beyond Ryan White to allow for that. I mean, I know this just from looking at Shanti.
And I thought that monkeypox wasn't that it was not so much susceptible, but just not as good a health outcomes for people living with HIV. Is that what people understand? I mean, it's all new to us, but if we want to make sure that we message out something, that I think that's where the council kind of,
we didn't. Yeah, and that's why I think we'd look to you guys to get that clarification, because you have access to, you know, be it Fauci or, you know, there's got to be a greater than just picking up what we read in the newspapers.
Oh, yeah. Fauci calls me all the time.
He's my boy. That's the
internet we're living on today, you know.
You got the internet, dude. Okay. Thank you.
All right. So go ahead, Mark. Or did you?
No, I was waving bye, but I waved bye too soon. So sorry. Oh, you didn't actually get the meeting.
All right, here. Well, then, all right, then we'll end it here, and then we'll see most of you on Thursday. All right.
Sounds good. Thank you all.
All right. Bye.